The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
A new controversial memoir, which led to the aforementioned Trump administration applying for an emergency temporary restraining order against the author, has already sold almost a million copies. Former National Security Advisor John Bolton is the highest ranking official to write an insider account of his experience in the White House in a new book, which he calls The Room Where It Happened, which is a nod to Hamilton, of course. Well, I'm delighted to say John Bolton is on the line. Ambassador John Bolton, good morning.
Hi, how are you? Glad to be with you.
Let's start by the fact that you've told us that you voted for Donald Trump, and yet there was enough about him that might have made him unelectable. The Pussygate scandal, the birth conspiracy, the dodgy Trump University, draft dodging, the bankruptcy. It might have cautioned experienced hands like you against voting for him.
Well, it was a difficult decision in 2016, but considering the alternative, I thought the risk was worth taking. Now, I'm not going to vote for him in 2020. After 17 months, I can't do that in good conscience. But it's a hard decision. I respect people who have made different decisions. It's going to be a hard decision for a lot of people in 2020, too.
Now, the Republican Party, it's been said, has been hijacked by Trump. I mean, famously, he was reported as saying only the Republicans would be dumb enough to allow him to run. Can you explain the willingness to allow his destructiveness in so many areas? I mean, is it simply about his ability to nominate conservatives to the Supreme Court?
Well, I think that there was intense opposition to his getting the Republican Party nomination. I think there were a total of 17 candidates in 2016. He was able to put together a successful campaign, and he was elected contrary to the estimates and predictions of essentially every significant and respected American political commentator. So 2016 was a remarkable process, and there are a lot of reasons people were against him. There were reasons to be for him as well. Whether he's reelected in November, I think, is very much up in the air. I understand from the list of things you've just read, you don't like him, and I bet you wouldn't have voted for him either.
No. Did you believe, though, when you joined the administration as National Security Advisor, that he was surrounded by adults in the room who would help him make his way from being a real estate dealer to being president, and that you could join that coterie of adults to guide his presidency?
No, I thought the adults in the room had been so smug, so self-satisfied, so open in their disdain for him that they made the problem worse for those who came afterward. Because his already large sense of conspiracy against him, the concern about the deep state, was really aggravated by the way they performed, and they made it difficult to try and reestablish a regular order. Many of those who considered themselves part of that axis had never been in the government before either.
Did you ever contemplate, as you've written in your book, you know, that it's hard to identify any significant Trump decision during your tenure that wasn't driven by re-election calculations, to contemplate the idea that there would be a president who put himself before the American people at every turn?
No, I could not contemplate that. But it's also why, when we're asked by friends around the world, what does this mean for the future of American leadership, America's place in the structure of alliances that we've created, that it doesn't really tell you much about that, that Trump is an anomaly. And that, as Winston Churchill once said, you know, you can always count on the Americans to do the right thing, usually after they've tried everything else. And I think we're in the everything else period right now.
Now, you know the idea that a woman is about to marry a reprobate and people advise her not to, and she says, I'll change him. Do you think that was the agenda for many of the people around Trump? They thought they could change him?
Well, I think that Trump himself said, you know, he did during the campaign, he did have the capability to be presidential. He gave a number of speeches in the campaign that I said at the time, others said as well, reflected his acceptance of the broad mainstream of Republican Party thinking on foreign and defense policy. So I certainly wasn't naive. I had heard all the criticisms, but I just felt it couldn't be that bad and that there was a way to try and get regular order established here so we could pursue policies that I felt were necessary at a time of great challenge to the country. And the book is kind of a recounting about how that optimism was turned out to be unwarranted.
Now, there were many rooms in which it happened, but you talk about the Tale of Three Cities, where there's a London visit, there's going to be a Brussels NATO visit and a Helsinki visit, and that Donald Trump mused that perhaps the Putin encounter would be the easiest.
Right. He asked who would have thought that, and the answer is only Donald Trump. But it was yet another indication that he had a view of authoritarian leaders like Putin, like Xi Jinping, like Erdogan of Turkey, Kim Jong-un, Maduro. It's a long, sad list that he felt more comfortable with than really the leaders even of allied and very friendly countries.
When the meeting with Putin happened in public, the press conference, and it was an extraordinary act of obeisance, I suppose, by Donald Trump to Vladimir Putin in public. And you guys went scrambling to try and put things right.
Well, I think I explain in the book, I was sitting next to John Kelly, who was the White House chief of staff at the time. We both were frozen in our places. Other members of the NSC staff who were there felt the same way. It was a catastrophic remark to make because it equated the statement of by the head of Russia to be of equal moral equivalence with the assessment of our intelligence services. And Trump himself recognized that he had done himself damage, and it took him overnight on the flight back and then the next day until he said he had actually misspoken and not included a negative, which would have changed the meaning of what he said 180 degrees. I recount that story in the book because it's the only incident that I recall where Trump basically backed down from a position. He didn't say, no, I said it and I meant it. He said, I actually forgot to include a not, I think was the key word, which obviously would have changed the direction of the sentence, and said that was his justification. He had not meant to say what he was being quoted as saying.
Now, you've said that someone like Putin can play Donald Trump like a fiddle, and not just him, other autocrats as well can do the same. When your book came out, we hadn't yet heard the story of the bounty on American soldiers and other allied forces in Afghanistan. Now that you know that he knew, because he would have been briefed, what's your reaction to his reaction to that story?
Well, I don't know that he was briefed on the 2020 information. The White House has said that it was included in the Presidential Daily Brief, which is a written document, but he doesn't read that. They have said further that it was decided not to present it to him in the once or twice weekly oral briefings he gets by the lead briefer. I can't vouch for that one way or the other. That's not the way a decision like that would have been made when I was there, but the sum and substance, which the White House is very clear on, accurately or inaccurately, was that he was not briefed. I think that's a huge mistake. I agreed with Susan Rice, who was Obama's second national security advisor. We both said, had that information come to our attention in the 2020 context, we both would have gone into the Oval Office and told our respective presidents.
There's been a lot written about the personality of Donald Trump, particularly in the light of his niece Mary Trump's forthcoming book. But you quote something attributed to Lyndon Johnson, and you say this is the way Trump reacts to the world. Lyndon Johnson said, "I want real loyalty. I want him to kiss my ass in Macy's window at high noon and tell me it smells like roses."
Yeah, that's the approach that he took, in my view, to loyalty. Not that I think he knew that Lyndon Johnson quote, but he certainly reflected that kind of attitude.
You have now made a mortal enemy of Donald Trump. He talked about the fact that your book was published, but the judge admonished you a bit, saying that you had gambled with the national security of the United States. And Donald Trump tweeted, he likes dropping bombs on people and killing them. Now he'll have bombs dropped on him.
Well, this is fairly typical Trump. It's juvenile. It demeans the office of the president. It's very unfortunate. I just don't think it's worth a response.
Are you concerned that there's nobody now to shout stop should Donald Trump get a second term? Inspectors General removed. He's surrounded by cronies more than experienced colleagues. The Attorney General, Bill Barr, seems to be a creature of Trump. And since every public servant serves at the pleasure of the president, if you whistleblow, even though you're protected by legislation, you know now you're going to lose your job.
Well, I think the facts that I lay out in the book show that over and over again in the national security space, Trump would make decisions not on the respective merits of the arguments for and against a certain action, but on the basis of whether, if he went in one direction, he would get blowback from Republicans in Congress reflecting the predominant attitudes within the party. So these are examples of how his decision-making was based on political factors almost to the exclusion of everything else. If he is reelected in November, and I think despite the public opinion polls at the moment, I still think that's a real possibility, then that last protection, the need to continue popular support and support within the Republican Party, disappears as a guardrail. And at that point, I'm not sure it's really very predictable what his decisions will be, since he doesn't function on the basis of coherent philosophy or grand strategy or even consistent policy.
Ambassador Bolton, can you explain to us why the Republican-dominated Senate is so at one with many of Donald Trump's ideas? And there are a few dissenting voices among the governors about his handling of the COVID-19 crisis and so on. But they row in with Donald Trump every time. And that's not how you would have imagined the classical Republican Party to be.
Well, I don't think they're in line with his policies. I think it's I think they can see the hold that he has, at least according to public opinion polls, on Republican voters, and they don't see it in their interest to split with him. The fact is, nobody wants to be subject to one of his Twitter rants. You know, it's what George Orwell called a 2 minutes hate. It's not fun. There's no question about that. But I think that it would be a mistake, although Trump loves to hear it, that he now dominates the Republican Party. I think after the election in November, whether he wins or loses, there's going to be a very serious debate about what the future of the party looks like. And I'm certainly looking forward to participating in that, because I do think we can correct the damage that he's caused. But we have to act soon. We can't. That's why I fear the consequences of a second Trump term, both for the country and for the Republican Party.
Finally, Ambassador Bolton, the damage that has been done to America's reputation and standing in the world, how great, and can it be fairly quickly repaired?
Well, I don't think the damage is that great. I think that we have an anomaly in the White House, and if he loses, I'm not going to be enthusiastic about Joe Biden's foreign policy. That's for sure. But I think if people really think Trump is reflective of America as a whole, they badly misjudge the country. I think the damage can be repaired. I'm more worried about a two-term Trump presidency, but I think one-term Trump presidency can be mitigated very quickly.
Well, the book is absolutely fascinating, hundreds of pages of it. It's called The Room Where It Happened, and its author, Ambassador John Bolton, former National Security Advisor to Donald Trump. Thank you very much for joining us on our program today.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.